Hello, I'm Ross Sadler, and welcome to a program which I hope will help to make music more accessible for some listeners. This is the second of two programs dealing with the chamber music output of Richard Strauss during the final decade of his life. In our previous program, we saw how Strauss returned to writing chamber music for wind ensemble during the 1940s, after an absence from the medium of over 60 years. We looked at the first work that he wrote in this new burst of activity, the Sonatina in F major, written during 1941 and subtitled by its composer from an invalid's workshop. Now, this three-movement piece was scored for 16 wind instruments, and during 1944 to 1945, Strauss again returned to the medium with a second sonatina, this one in E-flat major. And before we go into great detail as regards this composition and its various subtitles, there is a dedication. To the divine Mozart at the end of a life full of gratitude. So perhaps, before going any further, we should renew our acquaintance with Mozart's grandest composition for wind ensemble, Gran Partita KV361. Remembering, of course, that the way Mozart composed the work, it was scored for 12 wind instruments and double bass. Here's the opening movement, Largo Molto Allegro, played by members of the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. Strauss had written the first sonatina when he was residing in Vienna, but back to 1943, and Strauss was not in a good place. The destruction of the Munich National Theatre in October that year had distressed him greatly, and he'd decided that the only way forward would be to bury himself in composition. But in 1943, he moved back to his country estate at Garmisch. Contrary to popular belief, Strauss had never been and never was a member of the Nazi Party, and any relationships that he may have had with them were deteriorating rapidly. So Strauss, who had always greatly admired Mozart, must have found the creative process in writing for extended wind ensemble an effective palliative against the political realities that surrounded him. And all this calls into question one of the subtitles associated with his second excursion into the wind sonatina form, Fröhliche Werkstatt, or Happy Workshop. By what criteria the composer made this assessment remains a mystery. The other curious title associated with the work, namely Symphony for Winds, is easily understood because it decidedly came from the publisher and not the composer. Well, the sonatina in E-flat is structured in four movements, and it's scored for the same instrumentation as the first sonatina. The last movement was completed first in January of 1944, and was originally intended to stand alone. The first movement was composed in March of 1944, and the Middle Who movements were written in the summer of 1945, after the end of World War II. Interestingly, the post-war movements sound much more optimistic than the outer movements. Strauss marks the first movement Allegro con brio, etwas bewegter. In other words, fast, with spirit, and a little moving. The movement is written in sonata form, and our performers today are again the London Winds. The opening of the first movement is scored for two oboes, C clarinet, four horns, and two bassoons. This movement has thematic diversity which belies its underlying formal strength. As an example of this, the music that we've heard is followed by a sinister figure with dramatic harmonies reminiscent of Wagner. This has the effect of introducing a note of seriousness into a predominantly festive mood. This is followed by the appearance of the second theme, a lilting motif on the horn. The movement is characterized by wide leaps and bright timbres, which remain light and agile regardless of instrumentation. Strauss plays with textures and instrument groupings in this movement. Consistent with his style, the melodies are spread over a large number of voices and thoroughly developed to reach the limit of their potential. For instance, here's Strauss during the development section playing round with the theme we've just heard. Just before 8 minutes into the movement, Strauss produces what sounds like the beginning of a recapitulation, but this proves to be the commencement of an even more complex development of the opening theme. Recapitulation is brief and comes right at the end, leading to a coda, based upon the opening theme. So now here's the entire opening movement performed by London Winds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Strauss marks the second movement, Andantino, a diminutive form of Andante. It transports us to a world of refined Mozartian grace. The second movement features a carefree melody in the flute, oboe, C clarinet, and B clarinet, under which lies a stodgy accompaniment in the bassoons, contrabassoon, and third and fourth horns. As this clip progresses, you'll hear the flute playing a triplet motif, three notes played in the time of two. The oboe and basset horn now play a duet in canon that reverts back to duple rhythms from the triplets that we've just heard on the flute. The clarinet later takes over from the oboe in the pickup, but the basset horn continues to play a countermelody underneath it all. Accompaniment is provided by the horns here rather than the bassoons and clarinets that accompanied the oboe. We next find the reintroduction of the opening theme, this time with triplet embellishment in the flute and dotted 32nd notes in the horns. The movement ends emphasizing the low timbres of the ensemble, bass clarinet, bassoons, and contrabassoon. This is in direct contrast to the bright, high beginning of the Andantino. So here's the entire movement performed by London Winds. The minuet is a light, quirky and relatively short movement that conveys a casual and easygoing atmosphere while asking for strict rhythmic accuracy. In other words, it continues with the Mozartian character. The movement opens with the second oboe, bass clarinet and first horn playing a light-hearted dotted eighth note motif that is taken over by the first flute, C clarinet, second B-flat clarinet and basset horn. This is followed by a cantabile, in other words, singing section. The first horn plays a beautiful melody with support from the low voices of the group, bass clarinet, horns and bassoons. This includes difficult trills in a lyrical solo line. Eventually, the clarinets take over. The trio section comprises an elegant clarinet duet, almost certainly a complete manifestation of the homage to Mozart, which Strauss mentions. Just over 3 minutes into the movement, we see a return to the opening theme, and this brings the movement to a close. So here's the minuet movement, played by London Winds. Thank you. Which was originally intended to stand alone, houses one of the only serious moments in the whole piece. Strauss entitles the movement Einleitung und Allegro, in other words, initiation and then fast. As with the first sonatina, this is the longest of all movements. The introduction to this movement begins darkly, both in terms of tonality and texture. And you may notice the relationship of this opening material to the pseudo-Wagnerian theme we heard in the first movement. This leads to a first bassoon solo, which seems to start offering a little more hope. And certainly things are on the up. The first, flute and C clarinet in unison, play a fragmented melody consisting of 16th notes and triplets. It's passed back and forth to different instruments, but the oboe is the last to play it before the allegro proper sets in. The allegro section is light and airy, much like the majority of this piece. The high woodwinds alternate statements of the theme in groups. Flute and basset horn pass it to the oboe, with minimal accompaniment from the bassoons. The nature of this melody is slightly fragmented and bounces quickly from instrument to instrument. And I can't help noticing some parallelism here with the final movement of the Mozart Gran Partita, of which we spoke earlier. Well, getting back to the final movement of the Strauss sonatina, the main body of the movement is highly developmental in nature and combines a wide variety of virtuosic scurrying passages based on the opening theme with the somber melody that we heard earlier on. Particularly noteworthy are the climax at about 9 minutes, which is very reminiscent of the composer's tone poems. And also the way the opening idea dramatically interrupts the onset of the final culminating section of the work. But this idea is then changed triumphantly into the major key. So here's the entire final movement performed by London Winds.
Thank you. Thank you.